You're listening to The Growth Signal. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And my name's Gary Peugeot.
And we are going to get right into it. Gary, what is your hot take?
I think despite all of this excitement that is about AI right now, actually the way you're going to grow your business is through building personal and human connections.
I think that is such an important conversation, and one that I feel like I keep having different variations of. People are skirting around the idea of like, well, AI is not going to shake your job. It's going to just, you know, change it a little bit. And AI is not going to talk to your customers. It's just going to talk to the customers you don't really care about. So let's dive into your hot take a little bit more. Why do you think that personal relationships are the future and not AI?
Well, because in my world, I come from the photography industry. We've already been through seismic shifts in digital technology, right? And while AI will enhance things, right? It will do a lot of things that were routine tasks in terms of enhancing pictures, improving workflow, letting people become more productive. Absolutely. It's not going to replace the person who's maybe shooting that wedding or taking that headshot or doing those things. And to get those jobs, you still have to have a human connection. You still have to relate to a customer. There have been all kinds of platforms out there where they try and match people up, like listings and things to say, hey, almost like Uber for photography, right? And they haven't gone anywhere because people still want to know, hey, if I'm hiring someone to shoot my wedding, I want to make sure they're there and they're going to do a good job and I can trust them. And it's very hard to instill trust across a digital platform, as we've known from, like, if you watch social media at all.
Especially, like you mentioned, like shooting a wedding, right? So I'm just sitting here trying to picture myself telling my mom, like, okay, this is the most important day of my life. We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars or however much money you're spending on your wedding. And I'm actually going to have an AI little, like a little camera just set up in the corner, and it's going to grab all the pictures. Like, right. That would never even be a conversation that we're willing to have, because when it comes to those significant moments in our life, we aren't willing to allow technology or a machine step in.
Well, the reality is there's always been tools, right? I mean, I've been around the industry enough to know when Photoshop came in, everyone was saying this was the end of photography, right? I was at a conference in early the 90s at the Press Photographers Association. They were talking about what you could and couldn't do in a press photograph, right? If you couldn't, they're basically saying if you couldn't do it in a dark room, you couldn't do it in a digital photograph. And the thinking was, well, people aren't going to believe photos if they've been manipulated. Well, and the reality is all that happened was that imaging lagged behind text editing, right? Unless you go to a political event or a news event and you just read a straight transcript, right? You're seeing edited information, right? When a reporter writes an article, they're editing the content, right? They're making choices on what to include, what not to include. A photograph is the same thing, right? It doesn't shake your basis in reality if they lighten the tone or if they, you know, crop it or do certain things you can do. Now, if they change the actual content, like where they add things, that's really no different than a journalist adding stuff that wasn't in an event in a text form. So that was really the sea change in photography, was the idea that images could be edited as easily as text. Now, what's happened with AI is AI has now brought in the idea that you don't even need someone to generate the text, right? You can have an AI do it, right? We've all seen in blogs, you can obviously tell when something's been written by AI, it's not a human voice. And you can see the same thing with AI generated images. People can see the difference. Now, will they ever get good enough to actually replace humans? It will replace some humans, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. There's no doubt. But people who are able to bring added value to the marketplace, whether it's, you know, having a unique insight, having a unique vision in terms of photography or videography, or through creating sound. You know, I mean, we're running into an issue right now with Spotify, you know, broadcasting AI generated music. And yes, people are listening to it, but people listen to elevator music back in the day. So there are changes, but does it change the fundamental reality of the people still want human connection and human interaction? No, it doesn't. I don't think so.
I also think, though, it's going to lead to an experience where human to human interaction or human to human engagement in something that requires creativity is going to become a premium, right?
Absolutely.
So like if I want a custom song made and I need it to be premium, I'm willing to pay for it, then I'm going to hire a human being to produce that for me.
Right.
But if I have a 10-year-old son and he was going to state baseball for his travel ball team. So I whipped up one of those cute little like AI songs of like the full count baseball team's going to win. And like it was all this kind silly
exactly.
stuff. Right. And like I would never, ever hire a professional to produce that for me because I wasn't taking it seriously, but it was fun. So it's almost like there might be a mindset shift for those of us who are in service-based roles like myself or in creative-based roles. You get to do the work that is premium and fun and high paid, and you get to not have to do the work that is low cost and things you don't want to do in the first place. Let AI do it.
Yeah, you've definitely touched on a point that that you know AI is sort of suited for certain things that I think are more entertainment related, right?
Yeah.
So for example, you know, if I wanted to create an AI of myself in a cockpit like Tom Cruise and, you know, Maverick or whatever, you know, that's amusing. It's funny. It's not an actual memory. But if I was actually a fighter pilot, that picture of me actually in my cockpit is going to be meaningful, and I'm going to want to hold on to that. And I think that's the difference, right? I mean, yeah, if you wanted to have a custom song made for your son's, you know, baseball team back in the day, you'd have to find somebody to write it. They would have to write it and perform it and record it for you. And then you'd have to, and it'd be just too ponderous. It'd be too difficult to do just for something that was a simple amusement. But if it was for, let's say, your anniversary or something really important, you may actually hire a human being to do that.
Right. It's almost like the difference between creating something for entertainment, for fun, for, you know, for the laughs versus creating something that's meant to reflect a meaningful experience. Right.
Well, look, for example, what's happened in the music industry, right? It's gone digital and you have, you know, basically every song possible at your fingertips. It used to be very difficult to find new music. You'd have to go to a record store. And I know I'm dating myself, but I remember actual record stores with LPs and things. And the guy behind the counter was like, hey, this is the hot new band. And you'd buy the LP and you go home and play it and whatever. And there was all that sort of recommendation engine stuff that was happening in real life. And now you just go on Spotify and it listens to what you do and it recommends music. But if you want to have an authentic experience with music, you go see a live band or you go see Taylor Swift, even though all of her entire catalog, whether it was the prior catalog or the stuff she's re-recorded, is all at your fingertips. If you want to have that authentic experience, you go see her live and you interact with other people who are equally passionate about it. And so the thing is, what digital technology and AI and everything is going to expose is, guess what? Not everyone is Taylor Swift. There's a lot of people out there who are not talented, who maybe could get a record contract or things and get something released, or you know, maybe they were great in the studio, but they weren't great performers, but they could still have a career. And I think that's where the differential is going to be. When you reach that level, you're going to be really good. You know, you got to be better than the AI based or just mainstream competition. And I think that's just the way the marketplace is going to work.
When you were talking about, you know, like back in the day, you'd go into the record store and you'd have the guy behind the counter says, oh my gosh, you have to hear this, you know, underground band. Nobody else is listening to them.
Right.
And then now we just kind of like follow along with whatever our Spotify algorithm that be tells us to do. The algorithmic gods, you know, take us along the way. And I do think we've lost a little bit of that discoverability and like the relationship, because if the guy behind the counter at the record store, if I was like, I don't even like you, I don't like your opinion, I don't want to listen to it, right, we would form a relationship with those people and it would inform whether or not we're going to listen to their opinion. But with algorithms, if you think about it, there are real people behind that algorithm who are pushing their opinion on us in whatever way, whether it's tweaking the algorithm based on, you know, whoever's paid to have their stuff pushed into our feeds, right? Right. There's all these things that are happening with people that we don't know and that we don't necessarily trust. And yet we follow along with it blindly when we would never listen to that, you know, weird guy behind the counter if we didn't trust him.
But on the other hand, it's always been that way, right? I mean, if in the 50s and 60s, you had payola on the radio where people were paid, DJs were paid to, you know, convince us that Afternoon Delight was a good song. Right. I mean, that literally was happening back then, too. That's where I think, you know, some people think, oh, this is like a crazy thing that is changing everything. It's not. I mean, human beings don't change that much. And there's a financial incentive in every marketplace for some people to game the system. And in music, it's going to happen, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think about, too, like, so I have young kids and we're listening and watching a lot of K-pop Demon Hunter. I'm not sure if that has invaded your...
It has not invaded my, but I understand what K-pop is. And of course, the manga revolution is not to be dismissed.
So it's a movie on Netflix that has a soundtrack and it's got like all of these songs that have hit the Billboard Hot 100. And the story behind it is basically like Sony made it, sold it for, you know, peanuts essentially to Netflix because they didn't think it was going to do well. And now it's like the number one movie on Netflix of all time. Right. And it just goes to show, though, that even though we've done all this analysis, even though we have all these tools that's going to tell us what is or isn't going to be successful, it doesn't replace that human authentic reaction that we just can't predict sometimes.
Right. Yeah. The lightning in the bottle thing. I mean, when my kids were younger, you know, who would have thought High School Musical was going to be a phenomenon?
And still is. My 6-year old is watching it and has watched all the movies, and they're quite old now.
Yeah, exactly. They are very old. I think Zac Efron's like a grandfather now, isn't he, or something?
Something like that. She loves him. She only knows him as Troy Bolton. So
exactly. So yeah. So I mean, I think, you know, businesses that can lean into that, I think, is where the differentiation. I mean, certainly there's certainly going to be things that are transactional. There's certainly going to be things that are, you know, I just give you my money and you give me the thing, right? That's Amazon, right? You don't really want to have a relationship with Amazon. I mean, they're basically there to fulfill a transaction. And maybe, you know, you look at reviews and things like that for in your decision-making process. But if it's something meaningful, you're going to want to, you know, get live feedback on it or you know, experience, you know, recommendation at a store or a boutique or something. And I think that's one of the challenges that people have is our economy for a lot of years was built on the mass consumption idea. And now it's kind of pivoting to a very bifurcated economy in a sense where you have wildly transactional things, you know, think Dollar General, Amazon, and then you have higher end boutiques and shops and things like that.
You know, one of the things that you are talking about, and it brings me back to that original conversation, it's almost like anything that feels like it could be a risk in some way, it's a risk of not being meaningful, it's a risk because it's something new to me, it's a risk because it's super unique and I need to put my hands on it, right? Anything that is less impulsive, if you will, really still does need that human touch, because you're right, I'm not going to order my son needs new batting gloves. I don't even know what size to get. I'm not going to order them online because they're going to show up and I'm going to be like, those are the wrong size. But the ability to go into the store and put my hands on them and feel them and know that I got the right thing for him and for his specific purpose, like, I'm going to do that all day long.
Right. And that's, you know, and yes, Amazon recognizes that and they make it really easy for you to return things, but you still have those extra steps.
Yeah. Well, for example, he plays baseball. I'm new to baseball. It's not a sport I ever knew. I go into our local sporting goods store all the time and go to the baseball department and talk to the guy who works there and say, okay, like, what things do I need? How do I pick a bat? How do I do these things?
Right.
Of course, I could Google all of those things, but I don't want to get it wrong. And honestly, I don't want to take the time it takes to go down the rabbit hole. I'd rather just form a relationship with someone who knows what they're doing.
And you're not doing that with everybody, right? I mean,
not with everything, right? No.
But your relationship with your son is important. So you want the validation that you're getting an informed opinion. So when you buy things for him, you're confident you're not disappointing him.
Yeah. And putting him in a situation where he doesn't have everything he needs to be successful.
Right. Exactly.
So when you're thinking about you know, this conversation about how we build relationships in your own business or what you've seen. How do we distinguish when it's a premium relationship that we need to really build a personal relationship? And when is it okay for it to be a little more hands-off, technology-led connection?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's difficult because a lot of times with businesses, like in my industry, photography industry, you get people who are, you know, they reach a certain level of success. And then what happens almost invariably is they want to be the thing they're not, right? So let's say for you're a local camera store and you're doing really well and you kind of want to build your business. So you go online and you start building out a store and you're actually now competing more on price than in-person recommendations and things like that. And it tends to be a distraction, right? What I like to talk to people about is, you know, double down on your strengths, right? Find ways to get to be more personal, more authentic, more interactive, because that's really what people want. You know, what's interesting and what's happening in photography right now is film is coming back and in a big way. Most people don't realize that or weren't in photography, but, you know, people are getting the labs were getting out of film processing because everyone's going digital. And now there's so much business coming back for film. Kodak is actually back to doing three shifts a day, 24/7, making film because there's so much demand for it. And that wasn't the case 3 or 4 years ago. And the reason why that's driven is because of the growth of digital cameras and smartphones that take perfect pictures, people want inauthentic pictures, right? They want those pictures that have a little bit of grain or a little bit of lens flare or something, and they're willing to pay more for it. Back in the day, a roll of film was maybe, you know, $3 or $4, and then you could get it processed for $8 or $9. Now that roll of film is costing you $12 to $15, and they're charging $25 to $30 to have it processed, and that's even without prints. And it's because, you know, the model has changed, right? It's not a mass market product. So the people who are really into film now, they want weird emulsions and they want strange colors. They want these things. And the people who are successful at appealing to those people really find out, well, how are you shooting? What kind of camera are you using? Have you tried this lens? And they have those conversations that really lean into it, as opposed to just saying, oh, great, film's up and we're going to just, you know, throw out some more Kodak or Fuji film. It's really about having that relationship. And the concern that people have, which they should have, is, are there enough people out there to sustain that kind of business, right? So you just have to price it accordingly. People are not buying as much film at, you know, $12 or $15 a roll as they were back in the, because the volume's not there. So you have to make sure you're pricing it accordingly, that you're pricing it at a high enough level where you can make a buck.
It's so funny too, because it's, I think we're going to see this same exact phenomenon, and the film is a perfect example, because I coach a high school dance team. So I have a bunch of high school dancers on my team. They're like 14 to 18 years old. And it blew me away this last football game that we were at, where they weren't taking pictures with their iPhones. They were taking pictures with a point and shoot digital camera. And I'm like, what are you doing? That's so much, like, your pictures are way worse. And they're like, no, that's the vibe.
Well, it depends on what they're, the new cameras are really nice, but I know it's exactly what you mean. Exactly.
But a digital camera in your pocket. Why do you need a second one?
Well, or they're even shooting now with instant cameras, right?
Yes. I have a lot of girls who do like the Polaroid thing.
Yep.
And it's not Polaroid anymore. Popular. I just dated myself just now. It's like the
Well, no, Polaroid is still around, and then Fuji has their version, the Fuji Instax.
Yeah. Which that's the one that they all have, the fun
and
color
it's,
ones.
It's immensely profitable for Fuji, even though it's somewhat considered a dead technology.
Yeah.
It's actually a significant portion of their business right now. And it's because it touches on something, you know, the physical print touches on something that is a different experience than on screen. I mean, I always do this thing when I watch a movie, right, or a TV show, where you have somebody who's like thinking of a loved one who's passed away or something. They're never looking on a screen, have you noticed? They never like show the person looking at pictures of their mom or their passed away spouse or whatever on a screen. They're always showing them looking at with physical prints. They're always like going through a shoebox full of prints or or a photo album or something, because that experience is more authentic than looking at a screen. Not to say a screen isn't great and we all look pictures on screens, but the pictures that matter are printed. And the kids who are doing Instax or Polaroid or film, they're looking for that authentic experience.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see the same thing with AI too, because what was once a commodity is now something that makes you unique. Being a person and delivering services directly was once a commodity, and now it might be the thing that makes you unique.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, AI is just a tool, and it's in its infancy, right? The analogy I like to use is, you know, there's a lot of money going to AI right now, and people are still trying to figure it out. They don't know what the pricing is, but I think this is like the, and again, dating myself, sort of the equivalent of the dot-com bubble.
You are my second guest to make that analogy.
And then real companies came out of that. I think that's what we're looking at. We're in the AI bubble now.
Yeah.
And, you know, after that crash happens, then the real products are going to emerge.
I couldn't agree more. So considering, you know, on this topic of people and relationships, considering all of the incredible people that you know or that you aspire to know, who else should we be listening to?
Well, I don't want to name drop, but I've been in a prior life. I got the chance to meet and interact quite a few times with Guy Kawasaki, who was the evangelist for the Macintosh early on. And he's written a bunch of books on entrepreneurship and whatnot. And, you know, for Phil with Guy, he's like got a lot of quips and things, but great information. But what he's kind of done the last few years is he has gotten into podcasting, actually. And he just interviews interesting people, what he calls remarkable people. So if you're not listening to what he's doing, he's able to get some great guests because of his old notoriety, but he doesn't really talk much, which is kind of interesting, right? I mean, he would do keynotes and things like that, but now he's in a position where he's going to elevate other people. So I think that's someone that is, you know, in terms of what I try and do with my business and what I do, I always think, how can I make other people I'm talking to, the star, if you will.
I think that's so important too, because if I only ever listen to myself talk, I would only know what I know, right? The opportunity to get to meet incredible people, to hear their stories, just makes me not only that much better at what I do, but elevates their own story and brings them to the world. So on that note, Gary, if someone is really connecting with you, they want to learn more, they want to follow along, they want to pay attention to what you're working on, where can they find you online?
Well, I'm kind of all over the place, if you will. So I have, of course, I'm on LinkedIn. So it's Gary Peugeot on LinkedIn, not hard to find. And then my primary place in the industry is the Dead Pixels Society, which is just look for that and you'll find it. And we have a newsletter, we have events, and we have a weekly podcast where we talk about all of these things, plus how to run your business better. And again, if you listen to the podcast, you'll find out that I don't talk very much. I've talked more on this than I do on my own podcast. So
that's how I feel about the shows that I guest on too. Gary, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was a really important conversation, and I'm glad we got to have it.
Thank you so much.